Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anthony Petrone with Equity Research here at Jefferies. Thank you for joining us on the last day of the Jefferies 2015 Global Health Product Launches and some binary events coming up, and we just recently launched on the company with a $5 price target. It's currently around a little over $2 a share. With us today, we have the company's CFO, Jim Finkelsher, and we'll go for about 25 minutes here, and then we'll have a breakout in Eurus. Thanks for joining us this year, Jim.
Thank you, Anthony, and good afternoon, everyone. I do encourage you to take a look at our risk factors and the like on our SEC website, www.antaruspharma.com. So very interesting company. I've been with Antaris since November of last year. Antaris is a company that has three strategic areas of focus. We talk about our proprietary products, and those are products that are fully our products. We're out doing the commercialization. Otrexup and subcutaneous methotrexate injection is the first of those products. And then I'll walk through and talk about Otrexup as well as QuickShot Testosterone and some of the other products that we have. We have another segment of our business that we call Alliance Products. This is where we supply the device for a partner like Teva. We have a very nice relationship with Teva on a couple of different products, including epinephrine pen and exenatide pen. And then we also have an emerging area of our business that we call Complex Generics, and that will be marked by what we believe, hopefully, will be our first approval of our own ANDA in Vibex Sumatriptan. So let's talk a little bit about the proprietary products. So starting with Otrexup, this product was approved in the U.S., and we launched it in the first quarter of 2014. It is indicated for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. We had a co-promotion with LEO Pharma, who was promoting the product to dermatologists for a psoriasis indication. We recently terminated that agreement with them, and we'll get those rights back in June of this year. QuickShot Testosterone is a phase III pharmacokinetic study that completed. We got top-line data, which I'll show you in just a few minutes, in February of this year. It was really tremendous data. Probably, we believe that we have a best-in-class subcutaneous injection of testosterone. And we just recently announced that we received a response back from the FDA. We're aligned on exactly what we need to do for the final safety study, and we expect to start that study in the third quarter of 2015. We also have what we call QuickShot M, which is an undisclosed neurology product that's currently in preclinical development. And then we have a couple of other products. We were actually formed through the merger of a Swiss company that had gel technology, along with a company from Minneapolis that has the injection technology, the device technology. So some of those legacy products, Elestrin and Gelnique, are on the market and sold by other people, and we get a small royalty on those. So let's spend a little bit more time talking about Otrexup. Sorry, one too fast. As I mentioned, this is a subcutaneous injection of methotrexate. It is a single-use disposable device that's extremely easy to use. So it comes in a four-pack, which it's a once-a-week injection, so that's a month's supply in the four-pack. It is collar-activated without a push button. So for patients with rheumatoid arthritis, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for them to grab the injection and a simple, very elegant injection technique. It also has a needle guard, so after the injection, it locks out the needle so you can't have an accidental stick afterwards. And we have it in four different sizes. So the real key for subcutaneous methotrexate, Otrexup in particular, is it's a bioavailability story. Oral methotrexate is the starting point for almost all patients with rheumatoid arthritis. But as you get above 15 milligrams of dosage, you start to see a plateau, and oftentimes patients will complain of GI problems, upset stomach, nausea, and the like. And as a result, they can't tolerate any higher doses. But physicians know that the higher the dose that the patient can withstand, the better the outcome is going to be. And so what you can see is on the yellow line, that shows the bioavailability of Otrexup at varying doses, and even at the 25 milligrams, we're still continuing to see a nice dose response and much better outcomes than with the oral methotrexate. So we launched the product in early 2014. You can see that we were on a nice, steady, slow ramp. This is pretty typical of what you see in a rheumatoid market. Patients only get to see their physician once or twice a year, so it is a slow-to-adopt group of physicians. I want to point out that you can see some flattening in the curve in the October time frame. There's a couple things that that happen that we believe explain some of the situations there. First of all, we had a competitor, Medac Pharma, launched a competitive product called Rasuvo, and they came out with a heavy sampling program right around that October time frame. At that time, we also notified Quintiles, who we were using as our contract sales organization, that we were going to end the contract with them January 1st. So we had 25 sales reps from Quintiles. As you can imagine, that caused them to probably be more concerned about whether they were going to be selected to join the company as opposed to selling Otrexup in the Christmas time frame. We actually brought on 19 of the 25 reps and increased the size of the sales force to 32. Most of that work didn't get done until the late February, early March time frame. And what we could see is that since the beginning of the year, January and February, we're actually seeing some very nice progression on TRXs. So still a little too early for us to determine exactly where that trend is going to go to, but I think that we've made some really good decisions, and hopefully we'll continue to see the prescriptions grow. So what are we doing? Well, I talked about the fact that we've increased the number of sales reps up to 32. When we looked at the original launch, one of the things that we did was we benchmarked how our representatives were doing against other RA products. So, for example, Xeljanz and Rheos and some of the others. And what we saw was that our reps were getting a very good TRX per month per rep results. And so that gave us the confidence to say that we should move from 25 to 32. We are seeing just the first 2 months right now in the April data that we have, and our expectation is that we'll continue to see growth under there. I mentioned that we replaced those underperforming reps. We think we've got 13 new reps that have joined the 19 good reps that we got from Quintiles, and they're really a great group of people, so we have high expectations for them. One of the other issues that we heard with respect to 2014 was that it was difficult for physicians to get prescriptions filled. So as we launched the product without having any volume to make it attractive from a rebating point of view, and with the potential arrival of a competitor, in 2014 most of the managed care plans said, look, we'll make it available. You'll have to go through a step edit and prior authorizations, but we're not really going to contract at this point in time. So, and physicians really got tired of having the call back from the pharmacy saying, well, you need to do a prior authorization, can't get my prescription through. So in February of this year, when we rolled out that new sales force, we also launched what we call Otrexup Total Care. And Otrexup Total Care is a hub service similar to that used by most of the biologics, where the idea is to try to take as much of that hassle of getting the prescription filled out of the physician and the physician's office staff and put it on our shoulders. So we launched that. We did that also in conjunction with a patient starter pack. So we give away 4 injections of Otrexup. We essentially say to the doctor, give your patient a month's worth of product, have them go through the total care. By the time that they're ready for their next prescription, we should be through the insurance process, and that it'll go smoothly going forward. So that was something that we also put in place at the end of February. And now that we have both products out on the market, managed care plans have been willing to negotiate with us. And so we've had several plans that we have signed up with. Our goal, frankly, was to be able to knock down some of those prior authorizations and step edits. And we were looking for parity with Rasuvo. So, you know, with two products in the market, we feel that if we can both just have the opportunity to get the prescription filled, let the patient and the physician determine whether or not this product works for them. And so we've been successful with that. The first of those plans started to come on. We had one of them that started in January. another that started in the month of March, and we'll continue to add to those plans. So we have what we think is very good coverage right now, and as I said, at parity and at a reasonable rebate level. So, you know, we did not want to be in a position where we were trying to get exclusive on some of these contracts because of the high level of rebates that you'd have to pay in order to get that. We didn't think that that made sense to our shareholders. Okay. So let's move now to QuickShot testosterone. As I mentioned, QuickShot testosterone is potentially the first at-home auto-injector for subcutaneous treatment of low testosterone. Low testosterone's been in the news a lot. It was I came from Auxilium, so I know the market very well. Obviously, there were predictions that it was going to be a $5 to $6 billion market. We know that there were some reports of safety issues. I think those are largely have been dissipated at this point in time. But physicians have definitely cut back on the prescription. Nonetheless, it was about a $2.8 billion market at the end of 2014. And what we have is a tremendous product. So right now, the options for people who want testosterone replacement is gels, and those are once daily gels that require you to rub the product onto your shoulder or abdomen. That creates the opportunity for transference between the patient and either a female spouse or partner and children, which can have detrimental effect on their health. It's also the main reason that patients stop using testosterone is compliance. As men, we hate to do anything every day, and so a lot of patients get tired of putting their medication on, and as a result, on average, they would be product for maybe 5 to 6 months. So what we have is a single-use, disposable device, and it's really an engineering marvel. So the issue that you have with testosterone is it's a very viscous product, and so therefore you have patients who put it on in a gel, or they'll use an IM injection, which obviously takes a long time, can be done in the doctor's offices. There are some patients who self-administer, but it's quite painful and time-consuming. What we've been able to do is to figure out a way to engineer a device that will allow that very viscous product to be injected in less than 10 seconds subcutaneously through a 27-gauge needle. So it's with Otrexup, using the same type of a needle, we have in our label virtually pain-free injection. And we believe, certainly from the anecdotal discussions that we've had with patients in the trial, this is virtually a pain-free administration as well. It'll be a once-weekly injection, and I'll show you the PK, the pharmacokinetic data in just a minute, but it's really tremendous. So this is the data on the third line, the protocol required outcomes. That shows what are the generally accepted requirements for the FDA to approve a testosterone product. It all has to do with making sure that you have the patients in the right range of normal being 300 to 1100 nanograms per deciliter. You can see that in the third column, bottom row, you need to have 75% of your patients in that range. We had in our primary analysis 93% of patients that were in that range. And in fact, you know, what we did was when you look at those who actually completed the study, of the 137, we had 135 that were within that range, so almost 99%. So what we did was we said all the 13 patients that were not completers, we assumed that they would be above the range of normal, and that's where you see in the less than 1,500 but column where we got 91.3%. Again, for those who we actually did pharmacokinetic data for, we had 100% of patients under the 1,500 nanograms per deciliter. And we had zero patients that exceeded the upper range of normal. So this is, in my opinion, certainly best-in-class pharmacokinetic data. And it will avoid what you have, the problem with intramuscular, where you get this tremendous peak of testosterone followed by a trough as they get close to the end of the three-week dosing period. So that data was derived in February. We started the trial in 2014. We had gone to the FDA and showed them our trial, got some response from them. In the interim, We didn't hear anything from them, so we did that efficacy and safety trial. We heard back from the FDA in January, and unfortunately, I think as a result of the advisory committees that were held in September timeframe, they have come to a consensus that said, look, overall you need to have 350 patients exposed to your product. 200 of those need to be exposed for 6 months of safety follow-up, with 100 for a year. So as we looked at our numbers, what we realized was that we were about 70 patients short at 6 months. So we proposed and went back to them in March with a proposal for a new trial. We addressed all of the issues that they raised in their January letter. And we've been waiting to start that trial until we heard back from the FDA so that we didn't have the same situation happen again. So we just heard back from them, and we announced earlier this week that we are now finalizing our phase 3 protocol design to secure those additional 70 patients on 6 months safety, and we expect to start that trial sometime in the third quarter of 2015. Let's move to the Alliance products now, and we'll start out with what is an extremely exciting opportunity in Vibex epinephrine pen. This is Teva, a relationship with Teva, where Teva is trying to get the first AB-rated generic to Mylan's EpiPen. I think it's been in a lot of the news lately with the very interesting letter-writing campaign between the two companies. So it's certainly been a very interesting topic. But when you look at the sales of EpiPen on a retail basis, it's about $1.8 billion in revenues. I believe Mylan in 2014 disclosed that their specialty products division, which is primarily EpiPen, did about $1.2 billion in 2014. It's important to note that they took just under a 15% price increase in November of 2014 and another one in May of 2014. So, you know, that number can grow substantially up to a run rate of about $1.5, $1.6 billion. So what's interesting is that Teva this year, based on where we are, has included in their guidance for 2015 a risk-adjusted revenue number. They didn't say exactly what that was, but they included that in their guidance. Siggy Olson, who's the head of the generics business at Teva, has told us that this generic EpiPen approval is his number one priority. And he's also stated that he believes that there's no reason that they wouldn't get normal generic market share, which, you know, that's up for a little bit of debate, but I think it's safe to say that it's probably somewhere 50% or greater that they believe that they might be able to get of the market. Mylan also has included a AB-rated EpiPen in their guidance for the end of this year. And Teva has stated in February that they expect to receive some type of notice from the FDA within about 6 months, so that puts it out in the third quarter, July-August timeframe. So lots of interest right now because in Mylan and Teva have a settlement with respect to this drug. That settlement allows Teva to launch the product anytime from June 22nd on. Mylan has also filed several citizens petitions, and the expectation is that there could be a response to the citizens petition sometime in the middle of this month. I personally wouldn't be surprised to see that is met with a statement that says, we got the citizens petition and it's under review. We'll tell you how we feel about it later, but that's just my own personal guess. So it's starting to become a very interesting time for us as we wait for information about that approval. But there's a lot more than just epinephrine with Teva. We also have what we used to call Pen 2, which has been revealed to be exenatide. So we're doing a generic. And again, the way that our relationship with Teva works on all these products is that we supply the device, and we supply the device to them. We get a reasonable margin on it, and we get a mid to high single-digit royalty on the end sale of the product. So, you know, looking at that $1.6 billion market, if in fact they were able to get half of that market, even if they discounted that amount, the mid to high single-digit royalties plus the amount that we make on the devices could be extremely compelling for our shareholders. Exenatide was filed by Teva last year. AstraZeneca and Amylin filed a paragraph 4 certification in December of 2014. So on this, another very substantial market, we are into the 30-month stay. That will end in June of 2017 unless there's some settlement between the parties prior to that point in time. And again, we received margin on the supply and a single-digit to mid-teens royalty actually on exenatide. Then we also have what we call Pen 1. That's not disclosed as to what that is, but we're very excited about that as well, and we hope that sometime in the not-too-distant future, that will become known. Typically, Teva doesn't say anything about these until they've actually filed it in the U.S. and or Europe, and they've received a response back from the RLD. When you look at some other partnerships that we have right now, we have a relationship with Pfizer, an undisclosed branded OTC gel product, again using that technology that we had from our Swiss subsidiary. They're currently in phase 3 clinical development. This is an area where Pfizer assumes full cost and responsibility for the clinical development, and will receive a sales-based milestone and royalties for 3 years post-launch if they get that to the market. And also last year we announced a lifecycle management project in the third quarter. Again, it's a little frustrating, I'm sure, for shareholders as well as us. We'd love to tell you who this is. It's a very exciting relationship. But because it is of the nature, they want to keep it secret and as late as they can. So we just talk about it as an undisclosed lifecycle management project. But I think as we get to the point where that rolls out, people will be very impressed to see what that is. And the final leg of the stool is complex generics products. As I mentioned, we have sumatriptan, which we're expecting approval any day. Interesting history here. This was another project that we had done with Teva. We received some I would call it pretty negative information about both the device and possibility of approval. Teva at that time was also moving away from generics. This was at a point in time where they were trying to be much more focused on branded products. And so they were going to stop the project, and we said, well, tell you what, why don't you let us have that back? We'll try to address the issues with the device and get this approved. And we can't pay you anything for it today, but if we get approved, you can be our distribution partner, and we'll split the profits 50-50. And so lo and behold, in early this year, January of this year, we received a complete response letter. Not all complete response letters are bad, as we know. This one basically talked about the fact that there were some minor deficiencies, but it was primarily focused around labeling. And so when you get into those late stages of labeling claims, you usually feel pretty good that that there's a possibility for approval. We're waiting for that approval anytime. We submitted the response to the CRL in March. We know that it's actively being reviewed upon. And what I'll say is that because of the nature of the previous response from the FDA, we hadn't made the investment in the tooling, the molds that we have to use to do the development of the devices. We've now initiated those capital investments, and we'll be ready to launch the product by late this year or early next year, so depending on when that approval comes. But we're very excited about the fact that that will be our first ANDA that is truly an ANDA for Antares, and we expect that there are other complex generics that we can use our device technology and bring to market. So to summarize, we believe that Antares is a very compelling investment opportunity. We're a leader in high-performance combination products, a commercial stage company with an advanced pipeline and several near-term catalysts, including the Vibex epinephrine pen decision, the quick shot testosterone commencement of those studies and eventual filing of an NDA, Otrexa prescription and revenue growth, as well as the sumatriptan approval. So with that, I want to thank you for your attention, and as Anthony said, we have a breakout session downstairs in Eurus.
That's correct. We are heading to Eurus, and we're just about out of time here, so we can take Q&A downstairs. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.